Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. My name is Ken Edwards, and sitting to my right today is Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Ked. Yeah, I'm in the big chair today.
You are, yeah.
Which, moving up in the world.
Yeah, we bounced Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ed.
I think Ed is at a wedding, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So we have a cool show today. We have Fiona McEntee from the McEntee Law Firm and one of her partners coming in and talking about some immigration, I guess, issues and a new law, a relatively new law, that protects some folks that otherwise might not be protected for labor violations.
Oh, this, yeah, the Deferred Action Program, one of them. Yeah, right, there's a few different ones. Right?
Yeah, so they'll explain it. This is, you know, for me, this is really outside of my world, but it actually affects worker bees and
yeah.
labor. And so.
And you can use it as a whistleblowing tactic against.
I think that's right.
Against companies that are abusing their workers and exploiting them. And
I think at this point, any tool that we can get in the toolbox to help, you know, advance the cause of workers, I think is helpful. And this is an area that, you know, to be honest with you, I just don't know a lot about.
Yeah.
But we're going to learn.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, there has been lots of news over the past few days. And, you know, to be fair, right, we talked about, I'll just give you my joke. What does the Trump family and the Biden family have in common?
I don't know.
They both have convicted felons in them.
Okay. That's pretty good.
One of them is running for president, but, you know. You know, and to be fair, it's, you know, it's shouldn't have lied on your application for a gun.
Right? Yeah.
It's just like, these are both kind of paperwork felonies.
Yeah.
But like, I think the point is, like, don't lie.
Don't lie.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, Didn't you learn that lesson from George Washington?
Right. I won't tell a lie. I mean, if you're Donald Trump, you could have, I don't know, you could have said, yeah, I did everything that you'd accused me of doing, and I'm not going to keep it a secret,
right?
Because people still vote for him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's the difference?
My base does not care.
Yeah, like you said, you can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, nobody right. would care.
Yeah.
And if you're Hunter Biden, I don't see how you plead not guilty to that. You said that, you know, whatever it was, he said that he wasn't on drugs when he purchased his gun, and his book that he wrote says otherwise.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are you doing?
I have seen some. This case is forming some strange bedfellows. I did see Matt Gaetz, who's Trump's number one.
Yeah.
Lapdog was saying that this case against Hunter is BS. I think because there's a lot of obviously Second Amendment people who are pro-gun fundamentalists,
right.
And they're saying like, "What? I mean, we're going to judge a guy who did some drugs and bought a gun? I think that's half of our membership, you know." So
our membership. That's I'd say that's three quarters or more of
the
building trades. And that's why we got conceal and carry insurance.
Yeah, they are absolutists, the Second Amendment people. So
Phil, that a case came down. I think it was today. No. It was Friday that we're getting way off topic here, but we're gonna bring it back around to the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
that overturned Trump's ban on bump stocks, which
yeah.
I'm not sure what that is. I think it's like you put something on your gun to make it an automatic gun or something.
Yes, it allows you to kill a lot of people in a very short time span. Yes,
that's nice.
What it does. Yeah.
So I think in under Trump's administration they banned those bump stocks, and I guess on Friday the Supreme Court said no, you can't. And the Supreme Court, speaking of, just issued a ruling once again against the workers. It's just never the hits keep coming. And that was a case involving Starbucks.
Yes,
shocking, right? Starbucks, by the way, how much money do you think they're into for legal fees? I mean, it's got to be in the
100 million?
I have no idea. It's got to be an insane number, right? To not, you know, to fight their own workers. At some point, don't these companies just do cost-benefit analysis and go, you know, maybe I should just give everybody a $3 an hour raise.
Right. Despite, by the time you add up all the dollars and cents that they're spending on ways to block any type of activity or rulings from the NLRB.
It's just, it doesn't make sense to me.
Right. And the fact that they're kind of two-faced, we were talking about, on the one side, they're saying, oh, you know, we're starting to come around.
Right, we're the new friendly Starbucks.
Yes, we're the friendly Starbucks. We believe in neutrality agreements. We're trying to allow our employees to organize, but on the other hand, they're literally trying to break up the NLRB.
And call it unconstitutional.
So
I'm going to make this super quick because we only have a minute. Supreme Court came down and said that the National Labor Relations Board standard for issuing an injunction, for getting an injunction in court, needed to be stricter, that it was too loosey-goosey, it was all over the map. Some was high, some was low. And we'll have a smart attorney on here at some point, not me, to talk about this. But basically, to get an injunction, meaning that, you know, the case came out of Memphis, and it was the Memphis 7, they got fired.
Right.
And the National Labor Relations Board went into court and said, hey, you got to put these folks back to work, because by the time all the court cases are done, it's going to be years and years and years, and that will have a damaging effect, irreparable harm is what it's called, and you got to put them back to work today. And so the court did.
Right.
And they used a lower standard to do it, and the Supreme Court said, no, the standard should be higher. And by the way, there are all of 20 cases last year.
There hasn't been a lot filed. Yes, right.
So it's not like this is, you know, but of course, Starbucks, that has all the money in the world, can take this.
This is a solution in need of a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
But I think at the end of the day, it just means it's going to be harder for employee who gets fired.
Yeah,
to get back to work.
Yeah,
correct.
Right. All right. So listen, we're going to delve into this on another show. We will have some attorneys come on and give their viewpoints and explain this better than I just did. But we got to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Fiona McEntee and Company right here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ken. Sitting with me is Ed. There's Phil. And we are happy, psyched, stoked to have two really smart attorneys, like real attorneys, right?
Yeah.
Like, unlike myself. You guys are actually lawyers.
Yeah.
You like practice law.
Mm-hmm.
So Fiona McEntee, Catherine Del Rosario.
That's right.
All right.
From the McEntee Law Group.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, that is correct.
And so you are one of the owners. This is you and your brother?
Yes, my brother Ray and I are the partners in the firm, and we have a team of, now we're up to close to 20 staff.
20 attorneys? Yeah.
No, not attorneys, staff. Our whole team, yeah.
How many attorneys?
There's like five of us.
Five?
Yeah.
And you guys, strictly immigration?
Exclusively immigration.
And where's the office?
We are located in the old Irving Park neighborhood. We work in a really cool, like, music entertainment ecosystem there. We have a kind of flexible work policy, but most people are in office 2 to 3 days a week.
Okay.
And then we have an attorney, Anna, who is working for us out in San Diego, and she's coming in to visit us. We're getting to meet her for the first time in person.
Oh, really?
Very nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, like, tell us about yourself, Fiona. Like, obviously, you are from Italy.
I was going to say, my Italian's a bit rusty to even.
Northern Italy. I've got an ear for this.
The rest of this interview is going to be in Italian, so get ready. Buongiorno.
Yeah.
That's about all I know. Yeah. All right, so you are from Ireland, obviously.
Yes.
Where in Ireland?
From Dublin.
Okay, and what made you decide to come to the United States?
So I feel like sometimes I sound like some of our clients when I say I came here for a year in 2002, and you know, here I am more than a year later. But I initially came just for 1 year through my university in Dublin, University College Dublin, for a year exchange program at the law school at DePaul. So that was my intro into the US and into Chicago.
And what made you stay?
Well, I went home, finished my degree, came back. I just, you know, I liked the idea of practicing in the US as a lawyer. In Ireland, we have that, like, divided legal profession.
Where barristers.
Okay.
And, I mean, our family's massive, just the extended family. But Ray and myself were the first people to really go to...
Ray's your brother.
Yeah, my brother Ray, to go to college. And so we didn't come from a legal family. I don't think I ever met a lawyer until... some of my friends' dads or moms who I was in school with in UCD, they were all judges and lawyers. And, you know, just the idea of coming here, it felt like it didn't really matter that you didn't have a legal family, that you could, you know, that whole, not yeah, to sound I'm cheesy, but Fiona, it's like,
I was first lawyer in my family.
Yeah.
I mean, I met a lawyer early when it was the defendant, please rise, you know, did you guys get that?
You need to have him around just in case. It is important.
I mean, I'm no Phil in that regard, no. But, you know.
I've known a few.
So you came here and then, it's interesting. Chicago, mm-hmm. right? So I always think that people that come to the United States and like, oh, I'm going to LA, or I'm going to go to New York and make my fortune or become a blank or whatever. But you came right to the Midwest.
Yeah, well, actually, the school picked Chicago as a destination for me. To be honest, if I'm being totally frank, I wanted to go to Australia because I was like, yeah, let's get to Melbourne or Sydney and like have a year on the beach.
We're your fallback. Okay.
Yeah, I know. But it turned into my number one choice.
Okay, good. You saved it.
I've been told that so many times.
Yeah.
You personally?
Oh, yeah.
When you get that call at like midnight, hey, what are you doing?
Whatever you want.
There you go. So you come here, right? And fast forward, right? What year did you come back, Fiona?
In 2005 to get my JD at Chicago Kent, my Juris Doctor. And I've been here ever since. I was able to do that in 2 years based on my foreign law degree and my year at DePaul Law School.
So you walked in like as a 2L?
I mean, because like outside the US you can study law or medicine from the bachelor's level, which I think is, you know,
smart.
Does it make sense to force everybody to do 4 years of general ed and then go on to do, you know, I'm not sure, but the way our high school is set up, it's like it's considered the equivalent of college level.
Yeah.
So because of that, you can go straight in. So I had already been studying law for years before I was in law school here.
Got it.
So,
and then you just sort of never look back. When did you open your own firm, or did you ever work for another firm?
I did. Oh, yeah. I started in law school. I started focusing on immigration, and this was, you know, immigration and Catherine, you know, went to law school not that much later than me, but I don't think either of our experience in law school studying immigration is like what it is for people now. There are a lot of people who are just more aware of immigration as a practice area now.
Well,
which is
I hear
fantastic.
The word immigration every 5 minutes on the news, right? Immigrants and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's just, it must be an interesting time for you guys. Where did you go to school?
Kent, also.
You also went to Kent?
Yes.
But you're from here.
I'm from here, born and raised. I'm a Portage Park girl.
Okay. All right.
And I went to college in Seattle, University of Washington, but I came home for law school. I wanted to work here.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was the same, right? I'm from New York. I came to Chicago to go to law school, and I thought Chicago was a state back then. This was pre-internet. I really did. And I got here. I was like, look around. This is utopia here. Right? So
it's a lot better than Australia.
It is.
You don't get bit by a shark here. How about that?
That's true. Or, right? Giant bugs.
Yeah. And we have a beach. Look, it's right there.
Yeah.
It's open 3 weeks a year.
The Third Coast.
The Third Coast. All right. So let's get into the heart of the matter, right? And why you're here. I want to talk about a couple of things. One of them is, and we're having this disagreement on how to pronounce this, but you say how to pronounce this law that came into effect last year that talks about workers and labor.
So DALE is, and it's in immigration, there's so many acronyms.
Yeah,
so it's
for sure.
D-A-L-E.
Mm-hmm. D-A-L-E.
Yes.
Which stands for?
Deferred Action for Labor Enforcement.
Okay. So that sounds pretty fancy, right?
Yeah.
Sounds pretty intense or whatever. But explain in plain English what it is.
Okay. So it's this new way for workers to expose workplace violations without fear of retaliation. And the benefit they get is protection from deportation and a work permit, which means a social security number,
right,
for 2 years.
2 years.
With ability to renew potentially.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So just like bare bones, right? If I'm on a job and I'm undocumented, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am really vulnerable.
Oh, unbelievably
worker,
vulnerable.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they are some of the most
exploited.
Yeah. Of course they are. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about this on the show all the time, wage theft and, you know, making these people work longer hours and pay them cash and then they're not paying taxes on them.
Yep. You know, because, like, the company owners will say, like, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Who are you going to call?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
now there is something for them to do.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So now this is a protection for them to say, listen, if there's a labor violation, not only can I rat you out, so to speak, mm-hmm. right, but that will actually entail protect me as the worker.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, so basically, like, the violation happens, you report to the appropriate labor agency, and you ask that agency to issue what's called a statement of interest.
Okay, so,
and all that
so what
says,
does that mean?
It, all it's saying is that there's an ongoing labor investigation happening here.
So give us some examples of institutions that you would file this complaint with.
OSHA.
Okay.
NLRB.
Yeah.
EEOC.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever local
could it
county.
Could it be state?
There yes. can be some state. Yeah.
Could
yeah.
it be municipal, like a Cook County Commission on Human Rights, things like that?
Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah.
So basically, like the any agency, you can file this complaint that says, hey, I've been taken advantage of, and here's what they've done, et cetera. And they give you then, the agency gives you what's it called, a statement of interest?
Exactly.
And what does yeah. that mean? Just what does that mean?
Can I just jump in a bit real quickly? So,
I mean, you are the boss.
No.
You're actually like,
no.
you know, your name's on the door.
If your name's so on the door, you
get to do whatever you want.
But it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to be filing it like personally. Like, it can be filed in relation to the violation.
Okay.
Without naming like undocumented workers, that they don't want that to happen, right? They don't necessarily have to mention any undocumented. They just have to talk about the violation or right. the alleged violation.
Okay.
So the anonymity is a protection.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So who's the they? Can a union file it?
Yeah.
A union worker mm-hmm. center.
Okay. A worker
and
center.
The big advantage is that once a statement of interest is issued that covers that work site.
Yes.
Any worker, any undocumented worker from that worksite can use that same statement of interest.
And what do they? Mm-hmm. Where do they take that statement of interest? So they take it someplace and go, okay, I got the statement of interest. I'd like to apply for my work visa and social security number, et cetera. Like, where do they? What's the next step?
They would take it to an attorney or an accredited rep, which is a non-lawyer that is allowed to practice immigration law.
Okay.
They include that with the application for deferred action, which is the protection from
yes.
deportation and
yes.
the work permit.
Mm-hmm. And so where does that like, where does that go?
Well, before, can I just, another thing. This is a potential option, mm-hmm. right? But it doesn't mean that everybody should avail of the option. And so that process that Catherine was discussing there would entail screening to make sure it's an appropriate, you know, option for the person.
Why?
Well, there might be something from an immigration point of view that wouldn't be, yeah. wouldn't, you know, would kind of make them not a great yeah. candidate for whatever reason, right?
And so,
so there's still yeah. a layer of protection. I mean, maybe say, or just a layer of vetting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's what that layer is there for, mm-hmm. To make sure, you know, there's sometimes the government will issue things to people like in other kind of cases, like travel permits, just because you get issued, it doesn't mean you should travel, right? Mm. So it's always best to get advice. And there's lots of clinics and other ways to get advice. The last thing you want is just to get the statement of interest and think it's, you know, fair game for everybody to just file it without getting right. screened. So
yeah, it's like, hey, look what I got. I'm free and clear. I'm good to go.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that makes sense. So yep. there's got to be, I mean, in immigration law, there has to be an amazing amount of moving parts.
Oh, my God.
I can't begin to.
I mean, I really, honestly, I can't begin to get my mind around it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'll say what stands out to me with this is so often in the conversation nationally about immigration, it all just focuses on the workers. And so much on the undocumented conversation is focused on, you know, negative sentiments toward undocumented workers mm-hmm. working here. But I think people are letting the employers who exploit these people completely off the hook.
Yeah.
And I think everyone should be upset that you have employers that are undercutting domestic businesses and abusing workers. Like they're bad guys and they have to be dealt with as well, which is, I think, why something like this, an anonymous whistleblower type protection, is so important.
Yeah. And I mean, don't we want the most vulnerable workers to be as protected as possible?
Yeah.
Because then, you know, the workplace is rendered unsafe for every worker. So this is a good policy from an American worker standpoint
100%.
As well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned, you know, immigration law being so fast moving. And actually, the thing that's not fast moving about immigration is the actual law. Because yeah. Congress yeah. hasn't
you don't really
done anything in over 30 years. So
it's like
this
a third
is rate. Policy.
30 that seems like young. And we haven't had a change to the National Labor Relations Board since like 1935 or something. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but it's yeah. policy based, right? Which
right.
can change based on administration, which we obviously have an administration right now that's very supportive of these types of things, which is great.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, a lot of this is policy based versus Congress passing a law that's going to be on the books for forever.
So let me ask you this. We have to take a quick break, but will you stick around for the next segment so we can sort of delve into this and then talk about some other things? Yes, maybe. No.
Sure. Yeah. Catherine?
Yes,
we're in.
You sure?
Awesome.
Your boss just said you have to stay.
I'm staying.
You're staying, all right? Listen, we're here with Fiona McEntee, Catherine Del Rosario from the McEntee Law Firm, right? And we're going to be right back with more interesting discussions about immigration and some other things right here on The Worker's Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for sticking around with us. As we were talking about during the break, like, we could talk about this stuff for hours. There's an amazing amount of intersection between what you guys do in immigration law and, obviously, workers, right? Workers' rights, workers' issues, unions, job safety, everything. Like, there was just an article in the New York Times not too long ago about some immigrants that wanted to come and work in Maine to be like a lobsterman.
Yeah.
Because they're running out of lobster people.
Right. Well, we've reached that demographic cliff, right? And so the population is starting to get smaller, and there's fewer and fewer younger people to do jobs. So it creates an opportunity for immigrants to, you know, like this guy. He was from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and he came to Maine.
That's,
and
like,
he was
your specialty, by the way.
Taking a job as I read a book about it recently, the cobalt mining trade in the DRC. If you want to get into it, we can. Never mind. We'll save it another time.
Is that next to Etruria?
What's that?
Is that next to Etruria?
It's close by. It's not far. It's a hop, skip, and a jump. but he became a lobsterman. And, I mean, I look at that, and I'm thinking, like, American dream. My father came from Ireland to work here, and so many people do. And if there are jobs that we, you know, can't staff, then
Look, well, I mean, economists are saying that the reason that our economy is doing okay right now is because of immigrants. Mm-hmm. I mean,
if
there wasn't immigration right now, our deficit would be plummeting.
Well, let's go. Let's get to this, right? Okay, so I want to hear your opinion on this. Both of your opinions on this. So, you know, you turn on the TV, and it is the border, immigrants. They're coming here, you know, they're, you know, raping our wives, and they're stealing our jobs, and they're killing people, and blah, 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 blah. But like you just said, Ed, you're first-generation American.
Yeah.
You know, our boss, Jim Sweeney, first-generation American.
Right.
Right? My mom, first-generation American. I'm second. Right? Fiona's here, you know, not. Yourself?
My parents are from the Philippines.
Okay. So you're first. Yeah. There you go. Mm-hmm. Right? Phil? Still seems like he's been here forever.
Mayflower. Yeah. He's Mayflower material.
Third generation. But no, my grandparents are from Ireland.
Is that right?
Yes. I'm
so look, right here.
Yes, you are.
Right here in this room.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So everybody, like, you know, I mean,
it's part of the American experience.
But go back, you know, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, no Irish need apply.
For
right?
sure.
Irish need not apply. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was right here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, you know, it's like, well, we're going to demonize this, you know, people that are coming here to try and to get the American dream, right? And you're exactly right, Fiona. It's like, hey, listen, this is a job, but they're afraid to exercise their rights on the job, right? Because they're afraid of, you know, whatever repercussions might happen. Mm-hmm. And every time you turn on the news, it's like the next administration, like if it goes, you know, one way it's going to be this and the other way it's going to be round them up,
right?
You know, send them back, you know, get them into camps. And, you know, I mean, just really egregious, horrific.
It's a big gamble for anybody who wants to give their name information,
right?
To, you know.
So are you finding that, like, in your practice, are you guys finding that people are afraid?
Yeah, like when this policy came out, we were super excited and thought, okay, surely people are going to be knocking on our door to apply because we know that workplace violations are rampant. And that actually hasn't been the case. I think the idea of disclosing your name, your address, your immigration status or lack thereof is super scary to people. And so there's actually not been as much of a response as we had hoped. It's understandable. I totally get it. And, you know, like we mentioned earlier, with the next administration, we don't know, you know, how secure this is. And one thing I wanted to mention is that this is not status, right? It's temporary protection from deportation.
Right. It's not forever.
It's not forever.
And it's not a cure-all.
No.
So if you're somebody that's thinking about this, you're like, okay, I can buy myself another 24 months or I can continue to do what I'm doing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a tough choice.
And why isn't there like a permanent solution?
Page in Congress.
Yeah, that would require a change, you know, to the law. So this exists through policy.
Like, what was the precursor to this was that DACA, right? Am I getting that right?
Yes, exactly. And I think that people have seen what happened with DACA. I mean, we obviously saw the Supreme Court. We've seen states like Texas try to get rid of it. We've seen, you know, a presidential candidate discuss what they would want to do in next administration. Should that be you know, an opportunity?
Scary, inhumane stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we completely understand how people feel. And, I mean, these are people's lives, you know. It's the fear of, you know, dropping your kids off to school. Are you going to be there to pick them up? You know, these are real concerns in real lives. And I mean, it's not fair that immigrants are, that their lives are politicized in this way. And it's not right that you can have a policy that's so helpful and then all of a sudden something can, you know, an election can change the course of your life and like, you know, millions potentially.
That seems
of
to
other
be the
people.
Way nowadays, yeah. right? Because, as you know, one administration goes this way, the other one comes back, they reverse everything the other one did, the other one comes back, they reverse the other thing. And then you have the Supreme Court, which is just like a forever solution, and they just, you know, overturn everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not just for immigration status. It can be for ethnicity. It can be for a profession. It can be for like LGBT questions.
For
like
sure.
There are enormous populations of people whose future is entirely dependent or largely dependent on who gets elected.
And it's a shame because obviously
not a lot of
you
stability.
Know, like, you know, look, the, you know, I'm not going to get on my soapbox, but the country, our country was founded, you know, well, first of all, people were already here.
Yeah.
We actually didn't find anything.
We founded it from the Native Americans.
Yeah.
We borrowed it for a few hundred years from the Native Americans, but it was all immigrants, right? And people came here because they were leaving wherever they were, you know, England, whatever, to practice their religion and, you know, be free and blah, 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 blah. It was all immigrants.
Yeah.
And continue to be immigrants, right? Wave of Germans, wave of Irish, wave of this. They built, the Chinese built the railroads, right? Countries literally built by immigrants.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's high time that we recognize immigration for the good thing that it is. You know, I am sick of this negativity surrounding immigration. Of course, there's always going to be the tiny bad apples and they're being obviously exploited to kind of blanket all immigrants with this. But it is just outrageous that people have such a negative view towards immigrants because literally all the statistics are supporting how positive immigration is for any country's economy. And not only are immigrants, as we mentioned, filling other jobs, but they're actually creating jobs.
Yeah.
You know, we work with a lot of startups and they're, you know, immigrant startup founders, AI, like I could, you know, parrot off so many stats that show how many international students are studying in these critical fields. Like this is a real, if we want to be competitive, we need to embrace the benefits that immigration brings to the US because we're losing out. And, you know, I just feel like we just need to rebrand the whole concept of immigration because the mentality is immigration equals bad and that's not the reality.
Right. We should have a nationwide field trip to Ellis Island and let everybody see, like, see?
Yeah.
Well, so you know what? Look,
everybody
look,
came
you,
through
you
it.
Make a really good point, and that is how do you change the conversation in the United States, right? What needs to happen? And it's you're seeing it, at least in our world, labor world, right, where all of a sudden it used to be, if you remember, union, bad, right? Union, driving jobs overseas, you know, crushing the economy, blah, 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 blah. And now it's union 78%, 80% approval rate, and half the country would join a union if they could.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you change this, like, you know, the topic and the way people talk about it, Fiona? How do you see that changing?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the border is a part of immigration. It is not the only part of immigration. I think that we, and I think that the majority of Americans are closer aligned on this than we would be led to believe by looking at any of this. Because I think if you start to talk to people about international students, right, and you start to talk about why it's a good thing that they're here, they're subsidizing tuition for US students, if you're able to provide them with data like the union, right? And I think that's a great analogy to, like, can we do for immigration what was done to for unions, you know? And obviously it was so much hard work for people to it didn't happen overnight, and it's still, you know, you're still battling with some of those issues as well. But I think, you know, I always say it's kind of a prerequisite working in immigration to have this, like, optimism and hope, because the system is horrendous and outdated, but we always believe that it can be changed and that it can be better, and we work, I think all of us on our team, Catherine, work towards that. And so I know it's possible, and we've seen examples like what happened with unions.
And, and the fact of the matter is, as the birth rate continues to decline, we are going to be relying on immigrants to boost our economy. Like, there's no way around it. I mean, you know, like, who's going to be paying into Social Security programs, like everything that our retirees, like, you need more workers in this country, and it's immigrants that are filling that gap.
If there's anything that we saw during COVID, it's when businesses were struggling to reopen. There were just people were not interested in taking jobs. Yeah. And there are people there who are willing to work and work hard and, you know, do the, you know, live their American dream, pay taxes, do the right thing if given an opportunity to do so.
Right. Look, we want to get them. We want to get people into the trades, right? We're struggling, like literally struggling.
Right.
And here you have this whole set of people that would gladly come and take our apprentice programs and learn a trade and become valuable, you know, producing members of society. Not that they're not already, but you know, like this would be a path. So maybe there can be some sort of path with apprentice programs or something like that.
Yeah. Definitely. And you talk about COVID. I mean, Catherine, I'm sure, can weigh in on this. But the healthcare industry would collapse without the immigrant support.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever been to a hospital, you've seen a Filipino nurse, and that my mom was one of them. Mm-hmm. She came in on like the second wave of nurses from the Philippines, and she was not getting paid the amount that she was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So she told me that she opened up the white pages and found the address for the Department of Labor.
I love it.
She walked over and told them, and then they put a stop to it. And,
that's awesome.
You know, she moved on. And I mean, so the work is personal for me too, because I feel like I owe it to them. Like they gave everything to make a life here for us. And I mean, some of the rhetoric that I hear a lot is like, they're taking our jobs.
Right.
I just, they're not.
Show me one.
Yeah.
I literally, like, I've never seen one single job. Like, you know what? I want to be on that bridge that collapsed at midnight, you know, and put my life on the line. I want to do that, please. It's not happening, right?
Yeah. And I think one thing that, you know, people who say that kind of neglect is those who say that, like, things should be done the right way or they should fall in line. The line is impossible. That the right way is almost nearly impossible for a family member or some workers, and so, you know, it's not that simple, not even a little bit.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we gotta go, and we could talk forever. And I really appreciate you guys coming down here. This is important, and you know, we'd like to have you back on. You make good points about the intersection, I think, between immigration and labor. We realize it. We've talked about it. But it's nice to hear somebody that practices it. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, Fiona, where do they do?
I mean, we're on all the platforms, as you can imagine.
Even
TikTok. Nice. But we have a website, mcentylaw.com.
Okay. Spell that.
mcentylaw.com.
Okay. Phone number?
Phone number 773-828-9544. Email is info@mcentylaw.com.
And people can just pick up the phone, call you, and go, hey, I have a question. I want to have a consultation. Here's my issue.
Yes.
And you guys will sit down and talk with them.
Yeah.
And I know you've taken care of a ton of our union members, and we appreciate that. It's a big deal for us. People don't like to talk about it, the trades, right? Like, oh, are there immigration issues? But you know what? Look at the laborers, right? They're 50%+. Hispanic, I believe, or non-white, I guess I should say, correct?
Yeah.
Right?
Very diverse union. You know, a lot of the building trades are.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyway, we got to go. Thank you so much for coming down.
Thank you.
Yeah, really appreciate it. We will be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. That was interesting.
Yes.
Super, super interesting. Really smart lawyers. Thank you so much for coming on the air.
And an interesting perspective on immigration.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is obviously
right? Yeah.
A topic du jour these days.
That's
hear
for sure.
You know, from the workers' perspective is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the bad news department, there was a tragic accident. Where one worker died.
Yeah.
I believe he was a plumber, 130 member.
Yeah.
And another one was severely injured, and he was a local one iron, or is a local one iron worker.
Correct. At the University of Chicago.
Yeah, and they fell off of some scaffolding.
Yeah,
and
Cancer
I think it was really
Research Center. Yeah.
Windy. The conditions, I think, were bad. And, you know, it's... you know, it's a shame, obviously.
We hate to see this happen.
Yeah, it's just terrible. And sorry to the families. And, you know, but you got to be careful. Just be careful. If you don't feel safe, don't work.
Right.
It's just kind of that simple. You know, if it's not completely safe, you know, or you think it's not safe, call somebody. There's usually a safety person on a job site.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
This will be a lengthy investigation.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be there. And, you know, the families, I know they've already filed suit.
Of course.
But I think this is also illustrative of how dangerous this work is and why people who work in the skilled trades get those good salaries and benefits. Because, yeah, this isn't easy work that they're out there doing.
No, it's not like sitting here and talking on the radio.
No. It doesn't get any easier. Wow.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so be careful out there, guys and gals. We have a couple of other, I think, kind of fun things to report, if you want to call it fun. One is Waffle House, Ed's favorite.
Yeah.
Gave their workers a raise.
Really?
Yeah, they got some public pressure, and they're giving them like a $3 an hour raise.
Obviously, they've been listening as well. I didn't know that.
They're obviously listeners of the show.
Yeah.
And so they're giving their workers a raise, and I think it's not life-changing money, because they don't make a lot of money. They're one of those tipped minimum wage places. But, you know, money's money, and it's good to get some public pressure on some of these places, right?
And now their revenue is going to skyrocket because Ed's boycott is over. So
Oh, there's an Ed joke. I like it.
Oh, he's just a frequent flyer there.
He's not here, so we could take some cracks at him. That's awesome.
This is purely about his frequency visit.
Ed, you can go back to Waffle House now. And then another company that decided to give some money away is shocking to me, and that is Walmart.
Really?
Walmart, yeah, and they're going to.
They hate giving away money. Yeah,
yeah, they're on. They like taking money from taxpayers and et cetera. But you know, that's a topic for. I could go on about that forever. But anyway, they decided to give their 700,000 employees bonuses up to, get this, $1,000 a year. $1,000 whole dollars.
So is it like a merit bonus?
I don't know. But, you know, that's literally
work for that $1,000. Yeah,
that's a penny.
Yeah,
to the Walton family.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, one whole $1,000
couch cushions.
And by the way, they're still, you know, I think the lowest paid of the big box stores by far.
Yeah,
you know, it's Walmart and Target, Costco. I think is certainly number one in terms of pay.
Yeah,
but they decided to give their employees some money. So I think you're starting to see just this. At least a little bit of some public pressure, right?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta think that the union labor movement should take some credit for that.
Of course it should, right? I mean, workers are finally starting to wake up.
They're seeing what's happening outside.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
The United Commercial Food Workers Union, what they're making. And so, there's been several organizing campaigns throughout Walmart now. I mean, I think those are springing up more and more. And
somebody's got to organize Walmart, right? It's just like Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, like them joining the Teamsters, and, you know, they got to take on these big players. But the big players, I think, are starting to realize, like, oh, you know, maybe our day is coming, because all of a sudden now you saw McDonald's and some of these other companies scale back their prices and say, oh, you know, it was inflation related or whatever. No, it wasn't. It was greed.
Exactly.
You got called out on it. You got caught, and now you're lowering your prices.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, because you
give the money back. I don't have a free day or something, you know?
You're losing half your customer base by pricing them out. Yeah. So
people think fast food is luxury.
Exactly.
And then you had this hearing that you were telling me about, a House hearing.
Yeah.
What was that?
There was a House hearing from the Committee on Education and the Workforce.
Ah.
And they had a subcommittee hearing.
Which used to be, by the way, the Labor Committee.
Yes.
Yeah, they literally changed the name.
Yes.
God forbid you should say the word labor.
No, that's verboten. But this hearing was entitled Big Labor Tactics Edition, and they convened last month to, quote, shed light on the nefarious tactics used by big labor to unionize workplaces.
Oh, wow.
How scary is that? Yeah. Can you believe these people are trying to help the working class make a living wage? Wow. Like, how dare they?
And then they get some alleged, you know, worker bee, if you will, from Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's, yes. This guy. Like, I mean, the stones on this guy to be carrying the water for a multi-billion-dollar company.
That's trying to overturn the constitutionality of the National Labor Relations Board.
Yeah, another company trying to bust up anything that helps unions. But yeah, he testified to his personal experience navigating a workplace with a pro-union agitator. Oof. They've done nothing but be adversarial, misleading, exclusive, and discriminate against anyone who challenges or disagrees with them. Oh, I'm clutching my pearls if you could see me right now. It is. How dare they?
How dare they
being aggressive, trying to tell you that you should be making more money?
Yeah, how dare they try to put more money in my pocket?
I know. It's crazy. And then, you know, during this hearing, you know, which is run by the Republicans,
of course,
you know, there's five anti-union people and then like one person from the Economic Policy Institute who probably got like 1 minute to speak. And they're like, oh, you're done. Cut off his mic. You know,
because we have such a strong hold on labor in America that we're all of, you know, 10% of the workforce is unionized. So we're big labor. You know?
Yeah. They're coming to get everyone. Yeah. But as we were talking about, I think this is, again, indicative of what's happening in the South, because a lot of these members who are leading this hearing, they're from Tennessee, they're from South Carolina, they're from these states where they're seeing more and more union activity. And like, oh,
yeah,
we got to fight them now in Congress now and hold hearings that are a sham and try to brainwash people and thinking that this is not good for their livelihoods. When in fact, obviously, we can point to 1,000 studies showing that no, you're better off with
not only is the worker bees better off, but the taxpayers are better off, and the communities are better off, and the children are better off, and the schools districts are better off, and the roads are better. I mean, come on, like let's get on the right side of this stuff. You know,
but we're getting to it, man.
I think that's right. I think we are, and obviously it all stems from the workers' mic right here on 720 WGN.
All starts right here, ground zero.
That's exactly right. I saw like Florida, you know, the other day did like a Scott Walker Wisconsin thing, making it hard for their public employees to unionize, right? So the 50,000 members lost their bargaining rights just recently in Florida.
Oh, really?
Like, come on, Florida. Like, they just banned, heat breaks or water breaks. They banned water breaks, and then you know what happened to Florida? Yeah. They got hammered by the most rain they've ever gotten. So there was God playing a trick. Like, no water breaks? How about this?
Karma.
Here's a lot of water for you.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And so, of course, they declare an emergency, and you can, you know, they want, I'm sure they want taxpayer dollars to bail them out.
Yeah.
So, anyway, listen, there's a ton of stuff going on. We'll be back next week, and we'll talk about the rest of it. But listen, be careful out there, right?
Yeah.
It is, especially in the trades and police and fire and everybody else. Just be careful. You know, you got to watch each other's back. Make sure that you're being safe.
Yeah.
You get to go home at night, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Listen, we'll be back next week with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.